This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740. Welcome, friend, to our weekly garden party. We hope you brought along your questions because it's time to dish the dirt. On The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Don't be afraid to dance, Sean. I can tell you're like, oh, I don't want to move.
I'm tapping my feet.
Oh, okay, that's good.
Good morning.
Hello, everybody. Good morning. Frank is still in Florida, and I still hate his guts, but he'll be back next week, so I'll love him again. Sean Patil is joining me this week. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you. Thank you, Charlie. It's been a while.
It has. When was the last time you were here?
It was in November, and I would say it's over 2 years.
Wow, that which is a while.
Yeah.
But that's it. You know, when Frank goes away, I always like to call on some of my horticultural buddies and get you guys in, and I get to have a little nap in the corner while you talk to some of our callers.
Don't hesitate. You know how much I like to talk.
I do, and I know how much you know. You can share a lot. So, you know, I consider myself not a real specialist of any kind. I'm very wide ranging in terms of my horticultural interests. You, on the other hand, though, you tend to be more focused on things like native plants.
That's true. Natives, orchids, anything indigenous to Ontario and the Carolinian zone, or anything from the Bruce Peninsula. Those are the things that are close to me.
Right. And you're going to want to come and visit me in my new place because there's quite a bit of Carolinian. It's just, I'm living in what was a lake 10,000 years ago.
Correct.
And basically Prince Edward County was just a few little islands sticking up out of a lake. So there is a bluff behind, like sort of in front of my house to the west that, was, I guess, one of those islands that stuck up out of the water. And I guess there's sand if you get up there. Where I am, it's more rocks and pretty heavy soil.
Well, be careful, because anytime you invite me, you may, you know, have a whole convoy of other individuals.
Excellent.
Tom Atkinson and Tony Jovan. So it'll be a party.
Very excited. I know, I love having people come because, again, you've got we all have eyes to see different things, right?
True.
And just the recognition of some things. Like, you know, Sean James came and he's wandering through this kind of meadow that's moved in as the, you know, construction was happening. And he's like, "What's that fragrance? I smell something." It's like, he goes, "Is that you?" I go, "Nope, it's not me." He's like, "There's something here that smells really good." So he's down, like, hunting for whatever it was. And then it was like, "What is that plant? And let's collect seeds, and we don't want to lose that one. It's a special one."
So. It's very true. When I first met the group, in fact, it was 2012, April 28th, we went out, and these individuals, the trees are just breaking their dormancy, and they're pointing out species 500 meters at your 1 o'clock, and I'm embarrassed because I'm like, how are they doing this?
Yeah,
so I'm just looking down, and I'm like, oh, look, white trout lily. And they're like, oh, good find. I'm like, yeah, I don't know what you guys are talking about right now. I didn't learn my trees at that point as well as these individuals.
Yeah, well, that's it. And we do learn as we go, because I think that's the bottom line. Nobody knows everything.
And particularly when you look at any subsection of biology, you just, you don't, you can't.
No.
You learn 1% if you're lucky in your whole lifespan. Right. And even that, it's an enormous amount.
So we're constantly learning. And
absolutely,
that's a good thing. Keeps us fresh.
Keeps us young.
And not to mention. Hey, listen, we need to put the phone numbers out there. So
yes,
some people might call us and ask us some questions.
Absolutely, yeah. No calls yet, and of course, because they don't have the number. If you are calling locally, the number is 416-360-0740. And if you're calling from anywhere else, it's 866-740-4740.
Perfect. All right, so we will take our very first short break to some of our commercial sponsors and be right back. And of course, we'll have lots of calls by that time.
Great stuff.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Don't you love that feed into the show?
I do. I didn't know where it was going, though.
Yeah, no.
If you've got bugs.
Okay, welcome again. Sean Patil is here.
Thank you.
And he is in charge of the phone numbers. But before we read him out again, because remember, people, the mantra, call early, call often, because you can call more than once. One question per caller. And we do have Valerie on the line calling from Etobicoke. Good morning, Valerie.
Morning, Charlie. I hope to get some information from you today.
Excellent.
I had, 2 years ago, I had two gorgeous Diplodenia.
Mm-hmm.
And the frost got one last November. And I'm trying to propagate the one that's left before it dies off. But I had it in water with no success. How would you suggest?
All right. So right now you've got that one that you brought in the fall, and you've had it in a full sunny window somewhere in your house, and it's now sprouting new growth?
No, it's not sprouting new growth.
All right. So forget taking any cuttings, because
drying off.
Okay. So the only cuttings you would take from that plant would be new, fresh, green growth that should be sprouting given the time of year. So let's talk where it is. Is it getting any sun?
Yes, it is. It's in an east window.
East window. And there's no shears on that window?
No.
Okay, good. So it's open to the morning sun.
Right.
And it's in its original pot. So how often are you watering it?
Well, it's so dry. It seems to need water every day.
Oh, nothing needs water every day. You know what? It's probably a fairly big pot. Is it? It's like 8-inch, 10-inch kind of pot? Or?
No, it's not. It's about a
6-inch kind of pot. How tall is the plant?
Not very tall, probably less than a foot.
Okay. Huh. Well, a bunch of things you could do here. Sean, what do you think?
Well, I'm just concerned a little bit about the eastern exposure. Mm. We've had a very gloomy, overcast winter, so I think light might still be an issue in this case. Is there the option of going to a southern exposure?
Or west. Do you have any other windows?
Yes, I've got a west window, but it's
very
close to the window.
Right, yeah, so it needs to be better in an east window than far from a west window.
Okay.
But you know what? I was just going to say, sorry, Sean, did you want to say something?
Well, I was just, so no fertilization at this point?
I was going to suggest repotting.
You're going to suggest repotting, which would be, if it's dormant, too.
2 years in a little pot and what needs water every day would indicate that we've got an awful lot of root in there and not a lot of soil.
Okay.
Could you, Valerie, get a pot that's just one size larger than what you currently have? So let's assume you have a 6-inch pot.
Yeah.
Go to whatever your local closest garden center or home hardware type store is.
Yeah.
And you're looking for one size up, which would be an 8-inch pot.
Yeah.
And you're going to get a bag of fresh potting mix.
Yeah.
It'll probably be a soilless mix, which is fine. It'll be dry in the bag, so it's very easy to transport. It's not heavy. You don't need a huge bag, just enough to do a repotting job. And then, what you would do, I mean, it's not something you need to do today, but it's something I would really try and do in the next couple of weeks, is just lay some newspapers out on your kitchen table or your counter, turn the plant on its side, pull that pot off, and then look and see what's going on with that root ball. If it's all solid, massive roots, like smell the roots, feel the roots, look at the roots. If they're black and soggy and rotting, cut it all away. If it's white and light colored, that's good. Just untangle them a bit, get that nice, moisten up that new potting soil into the new pot with drainage, and then into the plant into the pot, firm it all in there, water thoroughly once, tray beneath it back into that sunny window, and keep an eye. You shouldn't have to water more than about once a week, and you should water thoroughly when you do so. So, I mean, 4 cups of water, kind of thorough. Enough to drain through and sucked back up into the pot. It doesn't really get sucked up into the pot, but bottom line is we water thoroughly enough that the water goes into the saucer below, and then the saucer empties itself as the water is absorbed into the pot through the drainage holes. And that way, what'll happen is a whole bunch of green growth is going to start to grow on your little Diplodenia, and then you're going to be in a position to take some cuttings and make some babies.
What I want to do. I don't want to lose the
exactly.
Left.
Exactly. And I'm afraid that in the pot it's in now, it's just basically sitting in a sort of a semi-dormant or a dormant state. It's not thriving. It's not responding to longer days, which most plants should be doing now because the days are noticeably longer and plants know it, right? So you should be seeing some green growth. And this is one way to sort of make that happen. Promote.
Give it a try.
New growth. Yeah, give us a call if any of that doesn't make sense. And thanks so much for your call. Remember, everyone, that if there's too much information coming at you too fast on a show like this, we are a podcast. You can re-listen at your convenience. You don't need an iPod. You just need a computer or a smartphone. And you go to AM740 Podcasts, The Garden Show. All right. I'll tell you what. Sean, why don't you do the numbers?
Absolutely.
One more time. We will then go for one more short break, and then we're going to talk to all the callers that are going to ring us up.
Sounds excellent. Okay, so again, if you're calling locally, the number is 416 360-0740, and from anywhere else, 866-740-4740.
Thank you, Sean. All right, we're not going anywhere. We'll be right back.
Daffodils and daisies, bluebells and begonias, forsythia and foxgloves, marigolds, magnolia, lavender and lupins, dahlias, delphiniums, stocks, fox, hollyhocks, tulips and sweet williams.
You've picked the right place for everything floral. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
It's okay. You can still laugh. We were just giggling. Thank you so much, Carlos. Carlos is sort of screening calls and quickly typing up on the screen what you might be calling about. And it was just funny what was going up there. So we were both giggling. Listen, we have a call from the United States. I'd like to welcome Richard from Illinois calling us here at The Garden Show in Liberty Village. Hi, Richard.
Hello.
What's going on?
Good talking to you.
Thanks for calling.
Yeah, Roscoe here. I tried spraying my trees last year. I knew that the apple trees and a few other trees already had some insects that had burrowed into them or
okay.
Deposited. And I used pyrethrin.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, remarkably, everything came out perfect. I thought, it's related to
permethrin is the synthetic version of pyrethrin. Pyrethrin naturally
natural,
is.
Right? So
yeah.
Is it bad to use on fruit trees?
Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. No, it's better, actually. I mean, where you are in Illinois, you can buy things like fruit tree spray, which is going to have quite an interesting array of far more toxic chemicals in that mix. So,
oh, wow.
I'm surprised, though, that you had such good success with a pyrethrin-based spray, because it is designed to kill on contact. Kill any insect.
You know what? I think I caught it just at the beginning of the infestation.
Yes, it must have been fairly early or mid-spring when you were doing the spraying.
Sure, because I know I saw the little nick marks, and they're dead. They're perfect. I mean, my apples came out wonderful.
Wow, that's a good story.
Oh, yeah.
I like that one. So what did we learn from that? Timing is
everything with insect control, absolutely.
Yeah.
And he did absolutely.
You paid attention. You're out there walking in your trees, you're visiting the orchard, visiting the plants, and you saw that something needed to be done, and you did the right thing.
Right.
Yeah, good for you.
And you know, your previous caller mentioned something about repotting a plant.
Mm-hmm.
With orchids, I'm having some dieback on the root systems. Am I doing something wrong with that?
So, dieback because it turns black, or dieback because it wrinkles? The roots.
Dieback turns black.
Too much water.
Too much water.
Is the compost or the fir bark that it's in, is that starting to degrade into a compost, almost like a soil?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so now it's probably time for a repotting. And just as Charlie mentioned, only one size up. So if you're in a 4 to a 6 inch, if you're in a 6 inch to an 8.
Mm-hmm. With orchid bark, if it's in bark now.
Correct.
I assume the orchid's in bark now. So you go to your local garden center, you get yourself a bag of orchid bark.
And is
redo
it
the whole thing.
Yep.
Yes. Is it in flower, Richard?
There's one that's flowering, but I've got 6-7 of them that are really not doing well.
Right.
Now's the time to do it. If they're not flowering, the ones that aren't having a flower spike or aren't flowering or in bloom, do it now.
Yeah,
it's perfect time.
And you know, I find orchids can be a bit intimidating when it comes to transplanting them. Just until you've done it once or twice, you tend to put it off because it's kind of scary.
Oh, yeah, I just left it alone.
Yeah, so make sure you get your hold of orchid bark, as we said, if they're in bark now. And the pots you get will be preferably special orchid pots because they have extra drainage holes in them.
Oh.
And if you're interested, if you go on YouTube or just go to Google and do transplanting orchids, there are some very good videos which will help you slow your heart rate down when you're doing it, like give you some confidence, a little more confidence on how to do it.
Good.
You will have some sharp pruners in hand. You will be cutting away dead, soggy, smelly, any kind of roots that are attached to the current orchids. Meanwhile, you will have soaked your new bark and you'll be ready to go and you'll carefully spread those roots into the pot, more bark back into your eastern or northern or whatever window you've got them in.
Okay, and then you pack the bark over the crown?
Same depth it's at now, basically. Or go ahead, what were you going to say,
Sean? Yeah, just make sure that you're not too low with the crown.
Yeah.
So
it's up to the crown.
The crown's at the surface of the bark, which is at the lip of the pot, basically.
It's a phalaenopsis, a moth orchid, correct, Richard?
Okay, I guess I'm saying, is it just below the leaf where the leaves come out?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, no. You want to go below the oldest set. So if they haven't turned yellow and shed off, you're going to be just below that.
Yeah, if you have a stem that leaves used to be attached to,
right,
down where that crown is still beneath there, so you might be a little bit higher than what
better
you think.
Better high. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, err on too high rather than too low.
Right.
So a little bit less bark than...
Good. When you're doing the repotting. But it's a good point. When they sit in the same pot, the bark will start to decompose, and it will turn to soil, and then it all stays wet for too long.
And 2 years, or 18 months, 12 to 18 months.
It's been 5 years.
Oh, goodness. It's ready. Yeah, and any epiphytic roots, any of the roots that are existing on the outside,
on the surface,
keep them on the surface. Do not bury those.
Right.
Right. Okay.
I know if people find that a bit frustrating, but those are very important roots. They are doing gas exchange, believe it or not.
My goodness.
So they need to, sometimes people don't find them very attractive and they want to cut them off. It's like, no, leave them alone. They need to be there and they should be green.
I taught biology and chemistry, but I didn't know about the stomas or whatever root. Those air roots are picking up oxygen.
There are aerial roots, exactly. Ferns, many of them have, and they absolutely are doing gas exchange. It's interesting.
Good to know.
It's really cool. I love it. It's partly what I teach at Durham College, and the students, their eyes pop out of their heads. It's like, what? So good. Well, thank you so much for calling.
Thank you. Appreciate it so much.
Good luck with all of that. All right. So look, Sean, we've got all kinds of calls. Croton plants. You know what a croton is from your Humber days.
Joseph's coat.
Well, I thought anthurium was more Joseph's coat.
See, the problem with the common names, right? That's why you need those scientific names, those botanical names. But, you know, it's always funny because I have customers come in and say, I'm having such difficulty with my croton indoors, where down in the Caribbean, they're hedges.
They're exactly. Right? They get out a chainsaw to trim them down.
Absolutely. So Susan from Stony Creek.
Exactly. So Susan's on the line. And I neglected to mention that Sean has had many years in retail, both Home Depot, Humber Nurseries,
Lowe's.
So you know a lot about the kinds of questions, just like me and my background in retail as well. So Susan, what's going on with your croton? And hold on, you're a first-time caller.
Yes, I am. First-time caller, long-time listener.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning to both of you.
Thank you.
I for the last couple of years, I've been taking my crotons outside in the summer, bringing them in during the winter, and naturally they lose a few leaves. Mm-hmm. So at the lower part of the plants, it's a little bare. Mm-hmm. And I'm wondering if I dip out some of the new growth, will that encourage some growth from at the bottom of the plant?
Probably not, because the base of the plant is probably quite woody, is it not? This bark.
It is, yes.
Yeah, so that goes back to the Caribbean, right? In the Caribbean, they trim and trim and trim, and of course, they're very bushy. I would do, if you're taking the crotons out in the summer, which are a wonderful idea, they probably love it.
They do.
Include them in a mixed planter. Use them as a centerpiece in a planter and get yourself some bright yellow whatever, or red or orange zinnias, marigolds,
Calibrachoa,
and plant that around the base of the croton for the outside, and then, you know, bring them in the fall.
Okay, then.
Cover those ugly, those naked ankles, as we say. Not so ugly, but naked.
Okay, it sounds good. Thanks for your advice. Have a good one.
Thanks for calling. Don't be a stranger. Coffee's always on, even hot chocolate. I'm saying that for Sean because he's a hot chocolate guy. All right, we have another caller, but I do want to just, can you give us any quick and dirty phenomenal update, anything you learned last weekend when you were at the Southern Ontario Orchid Show?
Oh, the Orchid Society, I mean, as always, put on a wonderful Valentine's Day show. Of course, it's always one of the coldest weekends. It never fails. It's not as cold as today is, but it's always the case.
I know, people trying to buy and get out to their cars. Oh, my God.
Didn't really learn anything. I learned not to spend as much money as I normally
there you
do.
Go.
So you limit the amount of cash
kept
you take
your wallet
with you.
Exactly, in the car or whatever.
Right? You go with a fixed amount. And of course,
it's like going to the casino, actually.
it could be worse if you're, you know, if you're addicted to plants like we are. So it was phenomenal. Yeah. And if there was a color trend, it was probably towards green and white. A lot of the exhibits, that's what they were focused on.
And was it as fragrant as it's always been?
Yes. There was one individual that actually was allergic to fragrances.
Oh, gosh.
And, you know, everyone's pointing out the most fragrant flowers to her. And she's like, "Oh, actually, I don't want the most fragrant. I need the least fragrant plant to take home."
Oh, right, to purchase. Yeah, because, I mean, there's usually the area in the main hall where it's all set up.
Right, where it's
for
all
exhibits.
Yes, yeah. And, and of course, with the orchids that I purchased, mine is more heavily scented in the morning.
Oh,
and that's common. That's quite common with plants.
You know, any flowers, yeah.
Yeah, Lady of the Night, Brassavola nodosa, that particular type of orchid is only fragrant sundown and until sunrise. And
because it relies on bats for pollination.
Probably, or a moth, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Good point. Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. And of course, Charles Darwin, he looked at Egrigum sesquipedale, a particular orchid, and he said this thing, looking at the spur on the flower, said, must be pollinated by a nocturnal flying insect of certain dimensions with a proboscis this long. And it wasn't only until he died that it was actually discovered that, yes, indeed,
very
this moth
specific.
Pollinated it. So, I mean, what a genius of a biologist he was, right? So,
the father of evolution.
Yes.
There you go. So, okay, so that's good. Well, I'm glad you were there because you were volunteering, setting up and helping with the show,
I was just basically guiding people upstairs, downstairs. It was sort of a quasi-security thing. It was busy.
Wow.
It was busy.
Big guy like you, scare those little old ladies with their orchids. Nobody's trying to steal anything.
a lot of bumping sometimes with the plants.
Crowded. It's a very popular show.
It is.
I wonder if they broke any records or anything like that. Well, that's great. Terry was here a couple weeks ago, Terry Kennedy.
Yes.
And
yeah.
she's a wild and wacky orchid person, her and her husband, the two of them. All right. So listen, we have Judy on the line. She's calling from Stratford. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning. How are you?
Excellent. What's going on in Stratford?
Nothing much. I have a begonia, and I got it last May, and it's green with reddy burgundy in the leaves. I want to start some off of it. How do I do that?
Oh, my. You want to try and explain that?
Do we know if it's a tuberous or
sounds like a Rex?
I don't know.
Begonia.
It's
okay.
Burgundy in the center, green on the edges. It's probably got kind of a wavy margin to the leaves, a little bit of silver maybe even in the leaves. Love that plant. You know what? It's really okay. I'm going to explain this, and you try and follow me. And you can even try doing this. It is not easy to do, though.
Oh, okay.
What were you going to say, Sean?
No, I'm going to let you take this one because I had a begonia.
Yeah, they're not easy to propagate. So here's what you do. So you get a nice clean pot with some nice clean fresh soilless potting mix in it, well moistened. Mm-hmm. You remove a healthy leaf from your plant.
Mm-hmm.
You lay that leaf. I know, this is where it starts sounding a bit wacky. Lay that leaf on the soil, top side up, bottom side down.
Okay.
You get a very you make yourself some little like bobby pins, and you pin that leaf so that the leaves, or you get little pebbles, and you make sure that that leaf is in full contact with the soil below, that moist soil below.
Okay.
Okay, so the pot is of a size that the leaf can sit very nicely flat on the soil. Then you get yourself a little razor blade, and then you make little nicks through the veins of that leaf. And again, you make sure that where those nicks are and where those veins are, very good contact with the leaf and the soil below.
Okay.
Then you make like a little plastic tent over the whole thing with some saran wrap and maybe a bit of wire or toothpicks, whatever. Don't put it in a bright sunny window because it'll become an oven, but do have it in a bright spot in your home. It could be a window, it could even be an eastern window, but someplace nice and bright. And then you wait.
Okay.
And absolutely magically, in about 2 to 3 to 4 weeks, little tiny leaves, just little tiny identical leaves, will start to grow from those little cuts in the veins where you made those little cuts, and new little plants will start to grow.
So then do I plant it in the ground, or do I just leave it like that?
You wait. It'll take you leave it another 5-6 weeks, and before you know it, those little plants become of a manageable size.
Okay.
So they might be the size of a teaspoon or slightly smaller. Then you get your razor blade back out, and you sever those little plants from that. By that time, that mother leaf is pretty shriveled up, and all these little babies are growing in the pot, and you lift them all out one at a time and give them all their own pots, and before you know it, you've started a begonia nursery.
Oh, okay. The lady, I got it at a plant exchange, and the lady had, like, there's a whole couple of big trays in them, so she must have had good luck.
Exactly. I'm sure that's what she did, because I'm trying to rack my brains. How else do we propagate Rex begonias?
Yeah. Oh, I was thinking of doing a little pinching, but I think that's that produces more plants in your method, so that'd be the way I'd go.
But it's a single-stem plant. Like, what are you going to pinch? Oh, wait a minute, let me think.
Any sort
side
of...
side shoots.
Side shoots. Yeah, I'm thinking if you take that tip, then you'll have some, you'll remove the apical dominance. But no, go with
I know.
The Charlie method.
It does work, but it's a little bit... And again, Google will show you a video of something like that, or you'll be able to see some photographs of how it's done. It's an amazing way. It's a form of cloning. So you're going to make little babies that are identical to the mother. And, of course, they are lovely plants.
Sounds good.
All right. Well, thanks for your call. That was a good one.
I was going to say that lady with the Diplodania, I wonder what color it is. It's not doing anything because my pink ones and white ones are all leafing out, but my yellow one is just some dead sticks, it looks like. So I wonder if he happens to have a yellow one because they seem to be hard to keep over.
I was going to say, very good point. Yellow is often the hardest of, because they're the most highly bred, whether it's roses or Diplodenias, the hardest ones to keep alive.
And the hardest to come by, probably for that reason.
Yeah, they're hard to culture, to grow up. So you're right. That's a good point. So, Valerie, if you're listening, you want to give us a call back, let us know. What color is the because she said she lost the one, but she still has the one. Excellent.
Thanks, Judy.
Good point. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for your help.
Our pleasure.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So next weekend, so a couple of announcements that we haven't gotten to. So let's do the one, there's one tomorrow you mentioned at Toronto Botanical Gardens.
Correct. And it's hosted by the Ontario Rock Garden and Hardy Plant Society. And the talk is by Kevin Cavanaugh of South Coast Gardens. This gentleman's a genius. Mm. And he's going to be discussing the evolving garden, selection of native plants for long-term success. It commences at 1:30 p.m. I do not know what is involved with admission, but if you have the opportunity, definitely.
Yeah, generally there's no admission to something like that.
Fantastic.
It's bring your own coffee cup usually.
And join the society. That's what I would recommend.
Absolutely.
If you get speakers like that in and get to listen to a gentleman like Kevin Cavanaugh, and he looks at native plants not just from, is it native to the province? No, you look at the eco zone or the eco region. There's no geopolitical boundaries when it comes to plants.
That's right.
And then, of course, on the 22nd.
The fall, next Saturday.
Next Saturday.
At TBG.
Yes, we have a Get a Jump on Spring. We're essentially at that countdown stage, T-minus 5 seconds before we launch spring. So I'm getting really excited and pumped up.
Aren't we all?
Yeah.
It's also CD Saturday at Toronto TBG all day, 10 to 3, free admission, lots going on, stuff for sale, expertise, societies are there to tell you what they do. You'll be there on one of the tables?
Oh, correct. Sorry. Yes. North American Native Plant Society.
There you go. So if you want to put a face to the voice, put yourself at Toronto Botanical Gardens next Saturday, because Sean Patil will be there at the Native American Native Plant Society table. But lots like free talks, demonstrations. There's books for sale. There's plants for sale. There's lots of advice from the master gardeners,
absolutely,
et cetera, et cetera. Cafe, coffee bar, silent auction, like nonstop day. Very exciting. Get the jump on spring. All right. Quick break. We really aren't going anywhere. And we'll be right back. And do give us a call. We've got a couple people waiting, but we'd love to hear from you. 416-360-0740. Or toll free 1-866-740-4740. We'll be right back.
Don't change stations just because the weather changes. Garden tips and advice all year round. This is The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin, exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
That's Charlie Dobbin and Sean Patil today. So happy you're here.
Thank you. I feel good being a sous chef.
There you go. You're being a very good sous chef.
Thank you.
We're sous chefing for each other because it's great. Your expertise is wonderful. We have on the line Ingrid giving us a call from Midland. Good morning, Ingrid.
Good morning. How are you?
Excellent. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
What's going on?
I have a tea plant which was given to me last fall. A friend of mine had it and she kept it outside but didn't like to take any plants in the wintertime. And it was beautiful pink colors on the leaves, but now the leaves, they've turned a very pale pink and the ends are all brown. And I'm afraid it's dying and it's such a pretty plant, I don't know what I could do with it.
So just to clarify, the leaves have pink on the leaves or pink flowers?
No, pink leaves. They're green and pink. Like the tops are a very, very bright pink.
Okay.
Oh, I wonder where the name tea is coming from.
Yes, because the tea plant itself, the true tea, is a Camellia sinensis.
Which is green. Green leaves.
True. And very, very nice green.
Glossy.
Vibrant, yeah, glossy. Yeah. So we're a little thrown off by the common name.
She could have that. Yeah.
What is going on?
Well, she said they're turning brown.
Okay,
give me an idea.
The leaves.
Are the leaves elongated or are they oval or how? What is she?
No, they're elongated. It's about 2 feet high in the pot. I have it in a 9-inch pot, and it's about 2 feet tall. And she said to me, or I read that it was a native of Hawaii.
Yeah, I know what it is. Cordyline. The proper name is Cordyline. Cordyline. Line, and the tea is actually Thai.
It's pardon me?
The common name for the plant that you have is
yes.
Not tea, but it's Thai. T-I.
Yes, T-I. Okay,
T-I. So that's a Thai plant. All right, now we know what plant we're talking
okay.
about.
Okay.
Excellent. Right, so the tips are turning brown.
Yes.
Okay. So, okay. Is it, okay, I'm not, I'd have to think about this. Have you grown this plant?
I'm thinking already. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I thought about this last night.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough. Yeah. You know, what else do I do as I'm drifting off to sleep? What type of water is it receiving? I'm wondering if it is receiving tap water that's chlorinated.
It is, but I let the tap water sit out. Usually for about a day before I put it on the plant.
Okay, excellent. And are you fertilizing at this point?
No, I'm not. I just got it in the fall, so I really okay. don't know what to do with it.
So I am a bit stumped because normally when you see sort of a necrosis or a browning or blackening of tissues at
yes.
the tips of the leaves, it's normally an indication
salt.
Of salt or nutrients accumulating.
Oh. Right. Or fluoride in the water,
exactly.
et cetera. So any minerals. Like
that's why I let it sit usually
yeah.
overnight before I put it on the plant.
Right. So that, I mean, the longer you let it sit, the better. You're calling
uh-huh.
from Midland. Oh, okay. So you're from Midland. And you're not on well water, are you? You're on city water?
No, I'm not.
Okay.
I'm on city water.
City right. water, okay.
So city water is going to have those traditional chlorines and fluorides
right.
and bromides
yes.
and stuff. All right, so light. How much light is the plant in?
It's in a southwest wind.
Oh,
that
should
be good.
A fair
amount of light in the afternoon.
Huh, that should be good. Okay, what about watering? How big? Is it in a big pot?
It's in a 9-inch pot,
okay.
and it's about 24 inches tall.
And how often are you watering that plant?
Well, I cut back watering. It's pretty dry now because I wanted
good.
To see if I could speak to you, and you could maybe let me know. Maybe I'm watering it too much or not enough.
Well, you know, it's one of the things that happens, and it happens with all of us, is we get kind of in a routine when we water our plants. And
yes.
for sure, in the spring, the summer, the fall, there's a lot of extensive watering to do. But come the dark days of winter, we really
right.
need to cut back on our watering, and often we don't. We're just so routinized, we keep watering.
Mm-hmm.
I would suggest you go to your local garden center, home store, and pick up something called a moisture meter.
Oh, yes, a moisture meter,
yeah. Yeah, it's like a little probe. It's about
uh-huh.
14 inches
stick
long.
Stick it in the soil.
Yeah, and stick it in the soil.
Yes.
And that way, you can feel the surface is dry, but what's going on down below is what might be going on. Is that it might be showing a little bit of suffering from too much water this past winter. So
okay.
you want to water thoroughly when you water, so a good, you know, saturation, if you will, of the plant, but then you want to
yes.
let it dry fairly to almost desert conditions in between. So
okay,
that
it's
moisture
quite
meter,
dry now,
yeah.
actually.
Well, it feels dry on the surface, but for all we know, down 6 inches, there's all kinds of moisture. Like we don't
yes,
know.
Yes, I haven't gone down that far. I put my finger in
mm-hmm.
maybe an inch or so, and it's not wet, but it is still a little moist.
Right. So if you're feeling moisture an inch down, do not rush to water it. Rush to get a moisture
okay.
meter, because you do.
Okay.
Yeah, that way it's just so easy to do with the bigger pots. Sometimes I'll use the weight as an indication. I have this huge
right.
Clivia plant that
mm-hmm.
I only water when it really needs it, because I'm not a very good mother to my plants, and and I just do it by weight. Like if I can rock that pot, then I should be watering it. If
yes,
it's heavy
yes,
with moisture, I leave it alone. So
okay, and should I be fertilizing this at all in the in the winter months?
Not in the winter. No, nothing in the winter. No. As we, again, the days are getting longer. Spring is in the air. So as we start to see some new growth, a new flush of growth on all of our indoor plants, and of course, eventually outside as well, then we will start to fertilize. But when yours is showing a little bit of stress, fertilizer will not solve that stress. Getting a more appropriate watering is probably what's going on. So get that sorted
better
out first.
Better water regimen. Okay.
Okay. And then, yes, for sure. Do start fertilizing. Yeah, in your case, if you can, early, mid-March, monthly at the most.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much for your help.
Thanks for your call.
Have a good day.
You too.
That was good detective work, hey?
You were good on the
tea plant, Thai plant.
Yeah.
Wow. So she said pink. I could see it. I just couldn't. I was like, I. What is it? What is it? Okay. Oh, we have to do our last and final break then.
Okay.
And again, we're not going anywhere. We've got some great callers coming up. So back in a flash.
Fur and feathers and bugs of all size. There's more going on in the garden than you realize. Should small creatures become a big problem, then you've got The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Exclusively on Zoomer Radio.
Exclusively here from Liberty Village, the Zoomerplex. Sean Patil is with me. Thanks again for coming in.
Anytime,
this has been great.
Anytime, Charlie.
So much fun. I mean, look, the expertise in the room.
I need the intellectual stimulation. at my stage in life, that's the only stimulation I get.
But you do, in season, work for the City of Toronto as a gardener now.
I do, yes.
So that keeps you very, very busy, except not now, not in the winter, obviously.
Correct.
So that's why we should have you here every Saturday in the winter, I think.
If Frank wants to go to Florida
for
or
the winter,
anywhere, absolutely. That's a deal.
All
starting
right.
Mid-November.
I'll let him know if you can afford it. Okay, let's see. We've got where am I? Grapefruit trees. Elaine in Bob Cajun.
Good morning.
Good morning.
It's a beautiful sunny morning.
Oh, lucky
you. I hope it is where you are.
It's a little cloudy here.
I'm sorry to hear that. The sun is around the corner, believe me.
Excellent.
I heard that there's quite a few tropical questions today, and my grapefruit tree is going to be added to that.
Okie doke.
I have a grapefruit tree, and I've had it for a number of years, but also I've been kind of having a battle constantly for the last number of years with mealybugs.
Oh.
And so I did call once, and it was about using the sprays, the insecticidal soaps, but that didn't work well. Now, I went on the computer, and they were talking about dabbing alcohol.
Yeah,
on.
Rubbing alcohol, yep.
Okay, so I did better than that. I filled a spray bottle with alcohol, and every so often I give it a spray, and that seems to be working very well, but I don't know how long the tree can last with every so often being sprayed with alcohol. Is that going to be a problem?
Oh, yeah. That'll kill it eventually.
I don't spray. It doesn't droop after I finish.
No. Did you add any water to the rubbing alcohol?
No, it's just the isopropyl, and it's a mister. So, and I just spray where I see the little white dots.
Huh.
But it seems to be doing a really good job, and I don't want to lose the grapefruit tree. It's over 40 years old.
Oh, my goodness. Sean, jump in here now.
I'm just going to say, if there is no visible mealybug, then maybe we can withdraw that.
No, every so often you see a little bit of white, and so I'm determined. I've only been doing that for the last month and maybe once a week.
Okay, and also check the pot. I've seen mealybugs sort of exist on the underside of that rolled rim on plastic pots and on the exterior.
Okay.
Yeah, so maybe do a wipe down of that as well.
With the straight alcohol.
With the straight alcohol. Maybe cut it down to...
Is it flowering right now, your tree?
No.
Has it ever
only ever had one grapefruit off it. It was delicious.
I bet.
But I haven't... I had that about 15 years ago, so I keep hoping.
Yeah.
I meant dilute, not cut down the alcohol, not cut down the plant. Sorry, yes.
Yeah, for the spraying purposes.
Yeah.
Well, that's right. So if you see that little waxy bit of whiteness, I mean, that's why we do it with the Q-tip, is because you can be so specific and you can use straight alcohol directly on the insect.
Okay.
But if it's a big 40-year-old tree, that's a lot of tree to look at and to inspect. Sure. And you'll see mealybugs even on the brown bark. Like they have they're no shame at all. They'll hunker down anywhere.
Oh, they're awful.
Yeah, they are. And they're hard to get rid of because they protect themselves with that waxy coating. So, well, if it's working for you, fine, but I'd be hesitant to use rubbing alcohol too consistently.
Okay.
Particularly on the whole plant. So try and be very targeted with your alcohol.
All right. And thank you so much.
Use
yes.
the stream rather than the spray.
And not to the point of runoff.
Yes.
So, I mean, you just got to get to that point where it's in contact with the leaf surfaces, top and bottom, and not dripping onto the soil surface.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, be like,
and I will do that with around the rim and underneath.
Yeah, good idea. That's a good suggestion.
We'll get rid of them yet.
All right. Let us know how that goes.
Fingers crossed.
That's
thanks
amazing.
So much.
Over 40 years.
Have a great weekend.
Good for you, Elaine.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Thanks
Bye-bye.
For calling. All right. Maybe we have time to fit in one more call. We've got Siva on the line. Siva is an old friend from the Scarborough area. Good morning, Siva.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Excellent.
Thanks.
How's
great. Thanks.
Things with you?
I have an apple tree in my neighborhood. I'd like to take care of it. And what I want to know is a combination of neem oil, soap, and water, will that do to take the insects away?
So this is in your neighborhood, you said. Is this like on a boulevard somewhere?
Yes, yes.
Okay. And you want to harvest apples eventually, is what you're hoping?
Yes, yes. It has beautiful fruit, but they're always filled with insects.
Okay.
I heard the gentleman talk about pyrethrum, but I don't know if that was a natural thing.
Yeah, pyrethrum is bug begone. Like if you go to your local garden center and you look for the insect sprays, number one, you won't find neem oil for sale as an insecticide. It's actually illegal. Like I can't recommend it as an insecticide because it's not registered.
Okay.
Though many people have had good success with it.
Okay.
And you can't even buy it, I don't think, in Ontario any longer.
Really?
Oh, maybe you can.
East Indian cosmetic sections.
Good point. East Indian cosmetic. Get down to Girard and Broadview. You can get it as a cosmetic. It's sold as a leaf shine and does work as an insecticide. So that's a thought. Okay. The best thing I can recommend, Siva, is... I'm just trying to think of the easiest thing for you. Because you know what it is? In the spring is when it's so important that we prevent problems with our fruit trees by spraying appropriately. I'd say the best and most important one is get that dormant spray
yes.
going. Have you, you've heard of dormant spray?
Yes.
All right. Get it. If you don't already own it, buy it. Dormant kit. It's the oil and the lime sulfur. So horticultural oil, lime sulfur mixed together with water. Follow the instructions to the T. You need the right temperature, the right wind speed, the no precipitation, all that stuff. Make sure that's all in place and spray the crap out of that tree.
Okay.
Then, and you may do it again probably 10 days or 2 weeks later after that.
Okay.
That's your best way to prevent problems with fruit trees.
Okay, man. Thank
Thanks
you.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Siva.
Siva's the best. And I, don't you love my horticultural terminology? Hey, we got mere seconds left, my friend.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you again
anytime,
for coming.
Anytime.
Really, really appreciate it. I'll buy you breakfast.
Sounds good. Thank
All
you.
Right. See, we'll be back next week. Frank will be here. Thanks again to Sean and Carlos. Couldn't have done any of this without your help.
Thanks,
and all
guys.
Our great callers. See you again next week.
This has been an exclusive podcast of The Garden Show with Charlie Dobbin. Heard every Saturday morning at 9 on Zoomer Radio, the new AM 740.
This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.